Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back to the Beauty and the Beast Physical Therapy and Strength Conditioning Podcast. I'm joined by my co-host, Dr. Rothschild.
How's it going, everyone? It's actually Thursday as we're recording this, so happy Thursday. I'm fortunate enough that Adam's a little flexible with his schedule, so that's why we're recording today. Hope everyone's enjoying the snow. We've had a lot of it since last Friday. So hopefully you're doing something productive with it besides hurting your back and shoveling, which, Adam, do you still shovel or do you have a snowblower?
We have a snowblower when it works.
I feel like everyone says that.
We had trouble with it. We got it all fixed up last year, and I had trouble getting it to stay running. So I did about half the driveway by shovel, and then when it finally would stay running, I finished it with the snowblower, but... Remember we had that monster snowstorm like 2 years ago? That one that dropped almost like 2 feet of snow.
Yeah.
So that was our first winter in the new house, and we had bought there are people that'll like, they'll like somebody will just be like, take this snowblower. It doesn't work. I'm not paying for somebody to get rid of it. Just come and take it. So the guy would take them. He'd fix them and then sell them cheap. So we bought one for like $100. It was a small one. That was the first time we ever went to use it. It worked for 20 minutes and then stopped.
Perfect.
Yep, was great. That giant snowstorm. So I walked to Ace Hardware, which there's a shortcut right by our house. It wasn't that far. And bought one of those, sled shovels. Like those giant ones with the huge handles that have the, like, so you can, like, put them up and on. And so it's not as bad if, like, versus hand shoveling. Yeah. But, yeah.
Well... I've had a lot of people coming in since last week, and my back kills.
Do you
do anything different? Well, I've had to shovel.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, well, when's the last time you shoveled? Well, last winter. It's like, well, there you go. I was like, I shoveled. My back doesn't feel great. If we shoveled every other day for 12 months, we'd be pros at it.
Yeah.
Not something that I want to be good at. So just understand, perfectly normal. But I was curious if your back gives you a little... tweak every now and again from too much shoveling.
Not too bad, because with that shovel, it's literally just like push and then like dump. It's not really like shovel, twist, toss, shovel, twist, toss, but I definitely have done that. So, yeah.
Well, I got to imagine with the heavier snow, it's not that easy with the push shovel.
No, it's a pain. I mean, you only get like half the amount because you just, at a certain point.
It's too heavy.
It's too heavy to push, yeah.
Yeah, understandable. But how's everything else going?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
You?
Yeah. Can't complain. It was like I didn't mind winter before winter showed up. And now that it's here, it's like, all right, we've had three storms. I'm good to go.
I'm good.
So trying to get out skiing more. RJ's taking that up. So
nice.
I'm trying to get in the skiing spirit, but it's not the first thing on my list.
Right.
But anyways, what's on store for us today?
All right, we are going to talk about what we wish the general public knew about our jobs. And it's more so, I don't know, I tend to think about it as, I'm thinking about it from the kind of lens of making what would make my job easier.
Sure.
And when I say easier, it's not like, oh, I wouldn't have to, do this work or whatever, do that, but... With some people, you spend so much time explaining why something is important just because it's not normal knowledge.
Yep.
That, it takes away from your ability to actually coach them because you end up talking about, why this is important, why that is important. They come to you saying they want to do this and you have to explain to them why, well, that's not as, like, we can put some of that in there, but we really have to make sure we get this in there and this is super important, you know what I mean? So it's just things that would make it more, maybe more fluid is a better way to put it, would make it, a more, you get more better results maybe because you just like if everybody is on the same page, it's easy to just go into it without having to explain everything.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
So maybe it's something like that.
Well, and think about the number of times that you have to explain that same thing over and over again.
Right.
It's almost like it's, you're on autopilot when you say it.
Right.
So there are many things that I have to do that with therapy, and we'll talk about that.
Yeah. So do you want me to start?
Yeah, you might as well. What's number one on your list?
My first one is that I wish most people understood is just how easy it is to make programming to, in quotes, beat you up. Like, to make hard programming.
And why do you think that is?
Because basically, all you have to do to make something challenging, or to make a difficult workout, is increase the amount of time you're working and decrease the rest. You can apply that to anything. Bench press. If you do four reps with 3 minutes in between, if you're using a heavy weight, that's going to be challenging, but you're not necessarily going to feel like you're going to like collapse to the floor. Now, do 10 reps with 30 seconds of rest and repeat it for five sets. And I mean, if you're using a challenging weight, you're going to feel tired. Oh. Squats, same thing. It doesn't. And I feel like, you know, you get people coming in, they're like, well, why am I not feeling like I'm beat into the floor every single time? It's like, well, because you need to train more than once a week. And you can go to a class and it's a cardio class and you come out of there and you can barely walk and, oh, wow, this person really knows what they're doing because they just beat the snot out of me in that cardio class. No, that person probably got there 15 minutes before. The training was written by some random person, or they took three exercises and put them together and they called it a high intensity training session. And it's one of the easiest things in strength and conditioning to do is to build a program that beats you up. It is not challenging at all.
No, it's not challenging, but I also think it's done very often because of the public's perception to, if I work hard, if I can't walk, if I'm sore the next day, that's where my progress is going to come from.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like boot camp classes, you know, and I'm not talking like a true, here's 45 minutes, I'm here just to make you get to that edge of puking and backing off.
Right.
You know, there, people will always, oh man, I was really sweating, you know, or I really felt my legs burning. What a great workout. I could barely move after. So I think that there's a direct correlation with, it's very easy to make something harder.
Mm-hmm.
And we should push people harder based off of their perception of, oh, I can't walk right. Oh, that was a great workout.
Right.
So whereas, in your opinion, do we constantly need to be making things harder to make it effective?
No.
I mean, that's just something for life. But with right. weightlifting in general, do we have to make it, quote unquote, harder to make it effective or challenging?
Yeah, in some respects, yes. But you don't have to. It should be moderately challenging, I think.
All right. So
over time.
Challenging. So yes. Let me reframe that question then. So let's say someone has that thought process of, if I can't walk the next day, that's a good exercise program. Let's say they do a workout, they walk fine the next day, they don't have delayed onset muscle soreness. Does that now mean the workout was ineffective?
Oh, no. No, it does not.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people don't get that. They have to feel that sensation, delayed onset muscle soreness, whatever it may be, and they just draw the conclusion that I'm working hard. Right. You know, I'm going to lose the weight from this. I'm going to gain my strength from this. And it doesn't have to be that way. You know, and I mean, you look at like Olympic lifters, for example, they really don't do a lot of eccentric work.
Mm-hmm.
And they can do a high level of concentric work, and they're probably not going to have the same overall DOMS as, say, you know, potentially you, who may go out purposely focus on the eccentric load of a deadlift,
mm-hmm.
and then next thing you know, you can't get on and off the toilet without holding on to the sink.
Right.
So, and you're laughing because you've been there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We've all been there. That's the great part. Now, what made you think of that? What was the genesis of that first thought?
I see a lot of, you know, it. I don't know how I've ended up with some of the, you know, just seeing, I don't know what the algorithm is on Facebook and all that sort of stuff, but somehow I feel like I'm seeing more and more workouts from people that, like, I can tell, you know, it's people that I've never seen before. You can tell that they just got into, you know, being a coach, in quotes, or whatever. And it's always the same thing. It's like, you know, look at me, look at how difficult this training is. And like, here's this person doing, they did 50 box jumps followed by 50 jumping chins followed by 50 squats. And you're like, cool. Like, that doesn't, I don't care. But it's like, but that's what people see and they think, oh, well, that's what it's supposed to be. You know, that I, you know, stuff from F45 and from Orange Theory and from, it's all the same thing. Oh, I felt so dead after this workout. And then,
well, and those are really just glorifications of old school boot camp classes.
Right, exactly.
You know, so they still take that mindset, you know, and you get like a, I'm not as familiar with F45. I do know it's 45 minutes of intense working out, whatever that may be.
Yeah.
Orange Theory, you have to get to that orange zone. They want to keep you out of the above the green but below the red. And I think that has to do with the whole EPOC.
Yeah.
So post, was it excess post-oxygen consumption?
Exercise post...
Yeah, whatever it was.
Post-oxygen. I know it's post-oxygen consumption. I can't remember what the E is.
Yeah. Post-exercise.
I thought it was exercise.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, whatever. The point is that you burn more calories after you've finished.
Yeah, and they would
after
say
you finish high intensity
up to about 36 hours.
Right.
That was the theory behind it. Some people say that that's not true, and then you bring someone in 24 hours later.
Yeah.
It's still relatively high. You crank them up again, and then the theory is, okay, I can keep my metabolism jacked up. Well, and then we run the issue of that point. Well, unfortunately, your body's never getting a chance to ramp back down.
Yeah.
So at a certain point, it becomes detrimental.
Right.
You know, I just had this conversation with someone the other day, and I think this fits in from the hard work standpoint. I'm probably going off the rails a little bit.
No, go for it.
But you can't push yourself 7 days a week, close to 100%, and expect consistent progress.
Nope.
The only thing that's going to be consistent with that is the consistent risk of injury, the consistent risk of overtraining, the consistent risk of being undernourished, which is not good for anyone. Now, could you get away with doing like a three-week cycle of 7 days a week? Maybe.
Yeah.
I'd even say that's aggressive.
Depends on what you're coming from. If you're going from 0 to 7 days for 3 weeks, you're going to run into trouble.
Way too aggressive.
But yeah, but I understand what you're saying. Yeah.
So there are small periods of time our body can do that. We cannot do that 7 days a week, week in, week out, months in and months out, because it's just going to lead. It's going to be detrimental to us. You know, not even just our training, but our health.
Right.
Because then we see our increased cortisol levels, systemic inflammation, poor sleeping patterns, poor eating patterns, and then the list just goes on and on. Now we're getting weight gain in there. Now we're getting depression and anxiety because we can't train the way that we want. We're sleeping poor, eating like shit, and I'm gaining weight now, but I'm doing all this stuff. Now I'm going to switch up my eating because it definitely can't be my training.
Right.
So now I'm going to take in less calories.
I'm eat less.
Oh, and then, well, now I'm still not losing weight. Now I have to push myself even harder.
Yeah.
Well, I don't understand. Well, I have knee tendonitis, elbow tendonitis, shoulder tendon. I don't understand why I just ripped my rotator cuff.
I don't understand why every morning I wake up after 8 hours of sleep, but I'm still exhausted.
Exactly.
I feel like I didn't sleep at all. Like,
oh, I mean, the dead giveaway with overtraining syndrome. And it's rare the average person's ever going to push themselves to hit true overtraining syndrome. Mm-hmm. You know, but we can have like that pre-overtraining syndrome. Whereas if you have no motivation to work out, tired all the time, an elevated heart rate in the morning, you need to shut it down.
Yeah.
You know, I am, the one time I usually will tell people, it's, you know, if you're sick, don't work out. Just don't do it. Low motivation day, not a great reason not work out. Those are going to end up being your best. But if you get to that point where you're just fatigued, low motivation, you're not sleeping well, so you've been eating like crap, it's like that's... you need to mentally shut down.
Right.
Like, you need to take 3 to 4 days, like, literally go out, pound a pizza tonight, enjoy every bite of it, enjoy not training for a couple days, and then slowly ramp yourself back up.
You know, I always think of this one specific, you know, big time, high intensity training thing that went around for a little bit, promoted, everybody heard about it anywhere, and I tried it for a little bit. And I always loved the, like, the promotional video for this. It was like, we took high intensity interval training and we turned it on its head. It's like normal high intensity training is 20 seconds of work followed by 1 to 2 minutes of rest. We flip that. This isn't more intense. You're going to blah, 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 blah. And I remember hearing that at the time being like, even then when I didn't know nearly as much as I know now, being like, wow, you flipped it. Like, wow, no shit, that's going to make it harder. It's like that's 2 minutes of work followed by 20 seconds of rest. No shit, it's going to be harder. Like, woo! Like, yeah. I don't know what you...
It's like, listen, I did the math. 2 + 2 does in fact equal 4.
I know.
You know, that's... it's ridiculous. All right, what's the next one on your list?
So, my next one on my list is how little MDs actually know about basic health and exercise. And maybe I shouldn't say how little they know, but it's just a focus.
So they have a different focus than what we would. So when we look at the – and I completely cut you off. I'll let you go with
that. No, that's fine. And the only thing that I want to say before we continue this is having people that I know that have gone through serious illnesses or are dealing with serious things – don't get me wrong. There are – I'm not saying don't go see your doctor anymore. I'm not saying that – you know, there are things that are caught that are only going to be caught by medical doctors. There's, you know, cancer risks and autoimmune diseases and all this – maybe autoimmune isn't the best example. But there are all these diseases and these huge complications that you need someone with a medical degree to diagnose, and if you don't catch it, it can kill you. So don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that you shouldn't go see a doctor. I'm saying that when your doctor is telling you diet and exercise information, 90% of the time it's outdated, unsourced information that they heard from someone else or they were taught medical school 30 years ago.
Which was wrong then and it's still wrong now.
And they are very, very good at illness, retroactively reactive medicine. Like,
correct.
There is a lot of need for that scientific advance. I'm not saying that that stuff isn't important. I'm talking about just your basic going in and let's say you don't, you know, you've done all your screens. Men, you've had your prostate exams. Women, you've had mammograms, all that sort of different stuff. I'm not going to get into all the different tests and all that crap, but I'm just saying like, okay, everything else looks good, but you're overweight, your blood pressure is elevated, and you know, you don't sleep or, you know, whatever. You have chronic pain somewhere. And 90% of the time, it's the same thing. I hate the feeling, and I think what it comes from is I hate the feeling that whenever somebody says, my ex hurt, I made an appointment to see my doctor. The first thing in my head, and the reason it's the first thing in my head is because it happens so often, is shit.
Yep.
I know exactly what's going to happen. They're going to go in. They're going to say, oh, my shoulder hurts, you know, because they were shoveling or something like that. I'm not saying like it's from my training or anything. Their shoulder hurts. So they go in. They go to talk to the doctor. The doctor says, well, what have you been doing? Well, I've been doing some shoveling. I, you know, do some lifting. I do this. What's the first thing they're going to tell them?
Don't do it.
Yeah, right.
Whatever the
don't offending, don't use that arm for a couple weeks. Yeah,
whatever the offending activity is, don't do it. Or not even what the offending activity is, they'll just pick things and say, shut it down altogether.
Yeah. Or, you know, I don't understand why I can't lose weight. Okay, are you exercising?
Yeah.
I lift 4 days a week.
Well, you got to do cardio.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you can't just lift. You got to go out. You got to do some high-intensity exercise.
Well, I am doing cardio. Well, you know, portion control.
Right, portion control.
You gotta cut your calories.
Are you eating white carbs? Yeah, I loved the day that I met with my new doctor, in quotes. I mean, this was last year now, but... experience was way better than when I was working with other doctors in the area, but the one thing was, oh, well, yeah, you know, white carbs, they just get turned directly to sugar. I'm like, well, I mean, technically, yes, everything gets turned to sugar, but it's not that simple. Like, it's just, like, little stuff like that. I know the difference, but the people they're talking to don't know the difference, and then when I tell somebody, look, it's okay to have a piece of candy every once in a while, or it's okay to have rice with your dinner, or it's okay to, you know, to not go out and run 10 miles. Oh, my doctor told me that you can't have any white carbs and that I have to go running.
Have one piece of candy a day, as long as it's one piece. Who gives a shit?
Right, exactly. And it gets frustrating to have to constantly over-explain why this is okay. And I lose clients because of it. You know, clients that I'm just starting out with, they don't know the difference between what regular muscle soreness is and what, you know, this could be, that could be. And I, you know, somebody does deadlifts for the first time and their back is a little sore.
Sure.
And I'm saying, okay, do this stretch and whatever. Oh, well, I'm going to go see my doctor first. I'm like,
well, and that's
shit.
I think, you know, you explained very well how what medical doctors are good for.
Yeah.
Now, what the general public needs to understand is that medical professionals, assuming someone has a relatively normal and uneventful health status, so they don't have cancer, they don't have multiple risks for cardiovascular disease, you know, maybe they're a type 2 diabetic, they're not good at fitness.
Right.
They're not good, you know, if
general health.
You are the expert of fitness more than they are. You know, just because they have an MD after their name, people say, oh, well, they know what they're talking about. No, they don't.
Right.
I mean, you know more about weight training than physical therapists do, because physical therapists do a poor job at performance. Mm-hmm. They can get people back to getting on and off the toilet. They can get people to put their pants on. They can get people to reach overhead into the cabinet. But now let's say you have someone who, I want to be able to do pull-ups. PTs can't tell you how to do that. It's just, we have this fancy degree and they really don't learn a lot about the things that you and I talk about week in and week out.
Right.
So, and that's, you know, that's sad to see. But when you look at someone, just your general public, they still have put the MD at that top of the totem pole.
And don't get me wrong. I don't want it to be like, oh, no MD ever says anything about exercise or whatever, just in the same way. But I wish that people understood. Like, if you told somebody to go see an MD, if you had a toothache, you wouldn't go see an MD, right? You go see a dentist. Well, there's really not that huge of a difference between going to see a dentist for a toothache versus an MD for a toothache and going to see an MD for knee pain and talking to a really good physical therapist or strength coach about knee pain. You know what I mean? Like, it's just they're different disciplines. And I just wish that there was some understanding, not only between the professionals themselves, but also the general public, that like, okay, just because you feel a little sore somewhere doesn't mean that you need to shut it down for the entire time. And it's difficult because there's only so much that you have time to learn, especially as a doctor. There are things that take precedent, and I totally understand that, and I don't think that it... I mean, I think there are some things that should change, but not like, oh, well, you shouldn't learn about how to treat cancer anymore. You should really be focusing on health, general health and fitness. Like, no. No shit. You should be focusing on the really important stuff. But...
Well, that's why we have oncologists.
Right.
But now the PCP should really be, you know, okay, you have a good health status. How do we optimize that?
Right.
Or at least understand, okay, you're at a good place. You're not at risk for diabetes. All of your blood panels, blood lipid panels turn out great. Go see Adam if you want to work on strength training, you know, because we know the importance of putting on muscle mass and maintaining strength and having good balance. So I think this is the avenue you should go. How many medical doctors actually say that stuff?
Right.
How many of them actually say to someone, you know, it's beneficial for you to strengthen because it's been shown to correlate with longevity? I've never had one say that to me.
No. Nope.
You know, I usually just get in there and they take my height and weight and, well, you know, your BMI. Okay, great.
I don't care.
Right now my BMI is I just calculated it's 28.2 because I had to do it in class.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm near that 30 where technically that's considered obese.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, well, don't worry about my BMI. You know, what what can I do to stay healthy? What are some other things to do? You know, talk to me about, you know, are there any vitamin or mineral deficiencies that I can work on? How do I not just feel okay? How do I optimize my health?
Right.
You know, and that's where I think naturopaths can also come in as well. So if someone doesn't feel the need to go to a medical doctor because they're healthy, maybe a naturopath or a functional health coach or someone along those lines could be very beneficial to now optimize health.
Yeah.
So it's all about knowing, again, if I have, you know, if I sprain my ankle to the point and fracture it when my bone is sticking out, I'm going right to the ER.
Right.
You know, but if I'm feeling really good and I don't have any risk factors for anything and I know I want to work out, but I don't have the knowledge to do so, then finding someone like yourself, a great place to go. And, you know, I'm glad you pointed that out. You know, people just say, I'm going to go off to the medical doctor, because one of the things that I hate, and this is a great segue, is that people don't understand that they don't need physical therapy. You know, and what I mean by that, most of the conditions that I see are simple little things that we can treat ourselves, you know, but unfortunately they go to the PCP. Oh, you have pain, you know, go to the orthopedist. And then, oh, we can't see anything, go to your PT. So now you're 6 weeks into it. And it's like, unless you've had some type of an acute traumatic event, a lot of these things really just come down to some type of compression and repetitive event. And that can be repetitive sitting in the same position, can be repetitive. You go hiking every weekend. Start with the soft tissue stuff. Do your foam rolling, your self-massage. And a lot of people, oh, foam rolling doesn't work. It doesn't improve performance. Well, that's not what the fuck I'm talking about. I'm just talking about loosening up the tissue. There is research to prove we have immediate increases in range of motion. We do have hypoalgesia, so sensitivity to a given area does go down after a while. There are some hemodynamic or blood changes right inside the muscle locally, not necessarily distally. So there are many changes that we can create. But even if someone says, I feel like this is helping, great, foam roll. I mean, at the end of the day, that's all that matters. You know, and then once we improve what we would call their pliability, then we can improve the muscle length, so flexibility, which then that will allow us to then go through our practicing our squats or some other movement pattern that we've talked about, and that allows us to improve stability and mobility. So, and if we just follow that same exact pattern or understand the concept of it, we can treat shoulder pain, we can treat hip pain, we can treat knee and ankle pain. You know, my second bullet point kind of fed into this as well, was if you go to a PT, we don't fix or cure you. So a lot of people just think that, oh, I'm going to PT, I'm going to cure you, I'm going to fix this, or
they're going to move my leg around until my back doesn't hurt anymore.
Yeah.
Or something, or whatever.
Yeah, or I've heard therapists, you know, even say, ah, it's all right, I'll fix you. You know, and I'm sure they're just saying that tongue-in-cheek, but there's some out there that really think that they're the reason people heal. You know, we're not fixing, we're not curing. We're teaching the patient how to create an environment that allows the body to heal.
Yeah.
So and these kind of go hand in hand, because as you know, my thought process with helping individuals, it's how can I help them help themselves? You know, that's first and foremost. I don't want to see people multiple times a week. I want to give them tangible things that they can work on. And if you never have to come back to me again because I was able to give you those tangible things, I've done my job. So if you're done in one visit, you're done in one visit. Of course, the system that we have in place, the medical system, you know, most PTs then have to prescribe multiple visits a week because of poor reimbursement. So they have to see volume, more and more people. But I'm just talking about why rope people into that failed system when we can teach them how to do these things. Now, I understand it's not for everyone. There's going to be post-surgical people that need to go have someone else help them. There's going to be the people who are not motivated to fix themselves, so maybe they need some supervision. But again, this is our average person.
Right.
They can work on themselves so that they don't have to go back to PT or, you know, and I think it also needs to be stated that if you go to a traditional PT, tell them on day one, listen, I know you're building me this plan of care. This should also be, there should be some reciprocity now because I should have some say in it. So if I only want to be here for a couple weeks to learn what I need to do,
right,
then that's fine. However, you get plenty of PTs who get a little hot under the collar and they're like, well, I said you have to be here. Well, who effing died and made you God? And that's another thing I hate about the profession. So, really it's you can fix yourself and we are not fixing you. I am not fixing you. I'm going to give you techniques to work on yourself, to fix yourself over the long term. And I just think the profession's done a poor job. And I think medicine in general has done a poor job teaching people to fix themselves.
Yeah.
You know, and I know we also, there's the other end of the spectrum of society that just says, I don't care, fix me.
Right.
I'm not talking about them either.
Right.
But I'm pretty fortunate that 99% of the people that come to see me are already active to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
They just want, what are one or two things that I can do to keep me going at a very high level? So what's your third thing?
So the third thing is the price of working with a good coach. And I feel like I run into this, and I realize that right now this is a difficult topic because everything is more expensive right now. Heat, electricity, my cable and internet bill keeps going up every year. Food, everything is more expensive. So I know that people are more price resistant, and I also know that in order to show people that you are worth the value, they have to see it over time. And like, I get that. I know that that's part of the reason why I have an easier time. I never have any price resistance from maybe like people that used to go to the gym here that moved away and now work with me remotely.
Yep.
They knew me for years. They know what my time is worth. They know what I know. And so there's never a question of like that I'm not worth it. You know yep. what I mean? But you talk to the person that doesn't have that, who's just looking to, you know, get in some sort of shape or, you know, hit some sort of goal or whatever it may be. And they look at, you know, oh, I go to this gym and I pay $49 a month or whatever, pick your amount. And they have a class the class only $10. Why, when I get, and I work with an instructor, why would I pay you X amount a month? I'm not putting my rates out there on the podcast. Why would I pay X amount a month to work with a coach when I can just go to this gym and do this class for $10? Like, well, yeah, that I guarantee that coach isn't going to be around that long, or that person hasn't been there that long. Because I got news for you. Any coach that has been in the industry for longer than realistically like 2 years, a personal training session with a coach that's been in the industry for a longer amount of time, 5+ years, around this area could probably run you anywhere from $50 to $100 an hour.
I was going to say closer to the $100
an hour. I was going to say, yeah. And that's for the people that know what they're doing. The people that really know what they're doing, we're talking multiple hundreds of dollars an hour for a personal training. You get closer to big cities like Boston, New York, LA, places that are high, we're talking maybe thousands of dollars per hour
mm-hmm.
for personal training.
Oh, absolutely.
And so I wish that people kind of understood that, but that this is also one of those like why such a low barrier to entry in the fitness industry is such an issue. Because there's so much price undercutting because people are just getting into it. They just need to make some money. But the problem is that people don't, like, things have to change. You know what I mean? Like, if somebody can only make that amount of money for so long until they've got to increase their rates, and then they run into the same issue. Oh, I can't get the clients anymore because I'm not the cheapest in town. Well, you're probably not the cheapest in town because you can get better results than the cheapest in town. If
yeah.
somebody is the cheapest in town, they're not the best in town. And that's just how it works. It works mm-hmm. the same way in the fitness industry as it does in any other industry.
Yep.
You pay a quarter a quarter of the price for one internet service, it's not going to work as well as the one that you pay four times as much for. What you can afford, that's a whole nother segment. I'm just talking about the perception of how much it costs. And that's what I tend to tell people. Like, I give them my price and they're like, okay, well, that's a little bit, maybe a little bit higher than I expected. And I'll tell you that the price that I charge is less than I rightfully should be charging. It's less than a lot of coaches that I know that have not, that do not have the same amount of experience as I do. But I have to build a client base. I have to, and when you're starting out something new, it means you have to start a little bit lower. You have to build that trust. You have to build that all up. But if people understood that they will only end up paying me 50% of what they were paying if they got the same amount of training in person, like, that's huge. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I was charging what I rightfully should for one-on-one personal training, I would charge over $100 an hour. And that's what I should charge because of my experience, how long I've been doing this. I've been doing this for almost 10 years now. I mean,
at the end of the day too, I mean, we're in this to help people.
Yeah.
You know, that's the goal at the end of the day. And you and I have talked about this before, and you know, realistically, based off of your experience, based off of just your time, sweat, tears, energy, you could be charging more. But again, starting out, it's more challenging. But also at the same time, it's a fair price for what you're giving,
right,
and what you're able to offer someone. It's just, then it comes down to, does the person understand the value? Are they willing to make that investment in themselves? You know, where I'm at, you know, especially where I'm out of network and I don't accept anything insurance, there are some other cash-based clinics in the area, and I can tell you they all charge more than I do, you know, and just a couple that I can think of, I'm about 30% less than what they charge. And it's not that they're 30% better than me. It's just some of them live in a more affluent area, so it's easier to get that. I'm also at a price point where I hope people feel like they're getting their money's worth.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, could I realistically charge more? Sure.
Yep.
But I also don't want to put myself at a price point that prevents someone from seeing me.
Yes. See,
I like making money. Mm-hmm. I like being able to pay my bills. But I don't want to sacrifice not seeing someone just to make an extra buck.
Yep. I completely agree with you.
I mean, I don't know. There are some of the business coaches now for out-of-network physical therapists that basically it's, you know, you got to charge more. You got to charge more. You got to charge more. But realistically, are the outcomes going to be that great if someone's paying $300 versus $200?
Yeah.
Or, you know, $150 versus $200?
Right.
You know, I'm certainly not saying I'm the best by any means, but I am very confident in my clinical skills versus those people that charge a lot more.
Right.
I'd be more than happy to compare my clinical skills to theirs.
Right.
I'm just at a price point right now that I think it's fair. I think it's, you know, and sometimes people may not agree with me on that, mm-hmm. but then it's, all right, if I get you out of here in two visits and you're back to doing X, Y, and Z, I think it was well worth the money that was spent.
Yeah.
You know, whereas you can go to physical therapy, regular physical therapy, pay your copay, you know, be better after 4 weeks, and they're still going to try to make you come for an extra four.
Right.
And then they give you all this bullshit about, well, you know, we need to make sure it doesn't come back, blah, 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 blah. Wrong. It all has to do with volume, filling up their productivity. And I just never, it's like, if I can get someone out of here in 2 weeks, why wouldn't I do that? Well, you know, we got bills to pay. I'm like, so you think they have a lot of money that they can just afford to come for 16 visits?
Right.
And I used to have an owner of a company would say to me, well, you know what? We're not diagnosing their wallet. It's like, you motherfucker. That tells me that you don't care about how many times I have to see them. You know, you want them to be seen, you know, X number of times a week for X number of weeks, because you want to make sure that the reimbursements are coming through the door. I learned that early on in my career. The second I heard that, I said, wow, this has really nothing to do with a patient's outcome. It matters more about is the company going to be able to keep the lights on? And I understand that now being a business owner. But giving the person a fair deal, giving them great service, letting them know you care, to me is far more important than, you know, can I get someone in 3 times a week for 12 weeks straight?
Yep. So. And I purposely, you know, I keep, similar to what you said, I keep in a certain spot because it allows me to work with people that I want to work with.
Correct.
There are some people that I know wouldn't be able to afford it if I charged, you know, what some of these other online coaches that I know of charge, $300-$400 a month. I don't charge anywhere close to that because I know the people that, you know, like I talked about before, people that I've worked with here that left and moved away or whatever, and I know them and I want to work with them, and I'm not going to price them out because ultimately working with three people for a third of the price each that know me, that have worked with me, that are responsive, that will do their stuff, that know what I'm offering, that aren't going to try and just keep adding on things that they want me to give them for the price, I will take that over one ultra needy $400 a month client because I will work a quarter as hard with those three people and get better results than the person, because that's the other piece too. Somebody comes in and wants you, let's say that you charge $500 a month, a session. Do you think that those people coming in, assuming it's not somebody ultra wealthy, like somebody who has decent money, what are they expecting out of you if they're paying you $500 a session?
Basically to just fix them, be perfect right in the moment, to kiss their ass.
Exactly. When you start, the higher that you make that price go, the more perfect you have to be.
Sure.
The more that they expect out of you, which is fair.
Yeah.
You're paying $500 an hour or a month for me, whatever it may be. But at the same time, sometimes that also creates unrealistic expectations.
Sure.
Somebody paying me $500 a month because they want to lose 30 pounds is probably expecting to do it in a month.
Yeah.
And that's not realistic.
Well, and it's
you
funny.
Throw as much money as you want at me. Yeah. I can't make you lose 30 pounds in a month if you don't have 30 pounds to lose.
It's not magic. You know, it's funny you mentioned the ultra wealthy. I have a patient, friend, mentor, who by all standards is ultra wealthy, owns his own international company.
Yep.
And the first thing he said to me, he gave me a lot of business advice in the beginning. He said, make sure you remember the regular people. Wasn't sure what he meant by that. He's like, you know, make sure you set a price point that the people who really need you can come to see you.
Mm-hmm.
And here's this guy who he could buy this entire building right now.
Yeah.
Probably just by finding the change underneath his seat in his car.
Right.
I mean, he was awesome. And he just said, you know, set yourself at a price point. You need to pay your bills, but just make sure the people that can benefit from you the most are able to come see you. So for that, it's like, holy shit, if he's saying this,
right,
that's pretty awesome. But I've also noticed it's not the ultra wealthy people that usually are, we didn't even bring this up. Have you noticed that the people that can afford to come see us, those are the ones that typically complain the most about the price?
That can, yes, yep.
You know, the people that can't afford, they're like, yeah, sure. But the people that can afford it are usually the ones that try to nickel and dime you.
Yep.
You know, you have people that have, you know, a full-time job, they're married, they have other side incomes coming in. They have, you know, 10 or 15 rental properties.
Yep.
They talk about going to Florida. They talk about going to Hawaii. They talk about going to Europe.
Yep.
But then you tell them your price and they're like, oh, well, you know, oh, blah. You know, oh, it's kind of expensive. And that tells me right away, that's not the person I want to work with.
Right.
Because they're never going to see the value in what I can help them with, whatever transformation it would be. So it was just that's why I started laughing when you brought up the ultra wealthy, because the ultra wealthy will just they'll pay for it. They don't care.
Yeah.
It's those in-between people, the ones that, you know, live a comfortable life, but they're typically the ones that'll, well, you know, it's kind of expensive. I don't know if I can afford you. And it's like, sure, no problem. And right. then it's like, are we going to reschedule? No, just call me if you need me. And then if they choose to come back, great. They must have saw our value.
Right.
If they don't, well, we know where the value is then.
Right.
So, let's see. Any other kind of professional faux pas that you wish people knew or did not know?
Those were my big ones. They're all, you know, they're small little ones. They're ones that we've talked about before. You know how?
Yeah. I mean, I touched upon mine. I kind of went off the tracks like I normally do. So we got through all of mine, and mine segued nicely into each other based off of yours. But, I would, if nothing else, hopefully people understand that through these podcasts or working with us, whether it was, you know, clients that worked with you through the gym or now through Gray Method or patients that come in to see me, you know, hopefully they understand at the end of the day, our goal is to help someone.
Right.
You know, and you and I have talked about before, when I went on this whole adventure of starting my own business, the money wasn't in my top three goals. You know, my goal was, can I just pay bills and I'll be happy with it? But it was to be happy again, to give patients the care they deserved, and to free up time so I can see RJ more. And I've been able to do that. So I think a lot of, at least the people that come to see me, understand what I have to offer. So, you know, I appreciate everyone who's walked through these doors and the people that you've sent, and same with the gym. And so, and that'll all, you know, again, I'm at the point now where word of mouth is huge. So, you know, you're still relatively new in that process. The second that you get that one person that you're offering a fair price and, you know, they see the progress, then they tell five people, and then they tell five people, and then they tell five people.
It's interesting to me, too, that along with the same, like, the people that can't really afford it tend to be the ones that, how did you put that, that are more likely to sing your praise? How did you put that?
The ones that can't afford it are typically the ones that don't want to pay for it.
That can't afford it, right. And the people that can't afford it, it's amazing how often those are the ones that also refer.
Oh, yeah.
Is it?
It's the ones that you make the, you help them out the most, and they will sing your praises forever.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, after a while, the people you work with, they're your best marketing tool.
Yep.
So, I don't know. I appreciate everyone comes in.
Oh, absolutely.
I think we've educated people. People that listen to this podcast, we've educated them enough so they know what they're going to get now.
Right.
I just wish there wasn't so much resistance from society, essentially, just to follow the same path of, oh, the medical doctor is up here and everyone else is down here, or, you know, in my case, you know, I want my pain gone yesterday. So those are other just little things that we can eventually talk about. But I think that was a nice beginner list. I'm sure we can come back and do part 2, 3, 4, 75, so on and so forth. But any closing remarks?
Nope. I think I hit everything. I think we're good.
All right, guys, you know the drill. We'll have all the information listed below. Next week, we're actually going to have a guest speaker. So it's going to be Jennifer Laney. She's a functional health coach, good friend of mine. So bring her on. We're going to ask her some questions and how she can help us, how she can help you. And we'll have all of her information as well. So if anyone has questions for a functional health coach that you want us to ask, certainly feel free to reach out and let us know ahead of time. I think we'll be recording that on our usual day of Wednesday. And then we'll, again, provide her information after in the links below. But as always, we appreciate you guys, and we're always looking at making a happier and healthier you. So until next week, take care.
Later, guys.